This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. This virus, so contagious and so alien, has been called a black swan event.
The idea comes from the fact that Europeans didn't know about the existence of black swans until they got to Australia. Black swans were sort of unthinkable. And that's a metaphor for things that are radically unpredictable. Nobody saw them coming, but after the fact, everybody has an explanation for them.
We spoke to Phil Tetlock, professor of psychology and management at the University of Pennsylvania, back in November of 2016, when the newly elected president was being called one.
Donald Trump is not a totally black swan. He's more of a dark gray swan. There were people in the summer of 2015 who thought he had some low probability chance.
What will happen? We don't know. The scientists studying the virus, they live with uncertainty. But we have a whole industry based on the belief that the perfect combination of experience and instinct can extinguish uncertainty. Whether the subject is markets.
The consumer is in great shape. There's 70% of the
Americans be freaking out. I don't think so, and I will tell you why.
Lots of earnings next week, okay? But they'll matter less than the coronavirus.
Or the subject is politics.
Trump is America's summer fling.
I think last night is the beginning of the end for Trump. That is my prediction.
Bernie Sanders won't be the nominee in 2020, just like he wasn't the nominee in 2016, because he still has the same...
As the battle for the Democratic nomination rages on, as the stock market plummets, as coronavirus spreads at an unpredictable rate and yet inexorably in our direction, pundits continue to stake claims on what will and will not be.
The question in this situation isn't, you know, did you see an extremely gray swan from a long distance, which very few people are ever going to be able to do. The question is, how quickly do you change your mind as new evidence comes in?
New York Times opinion columnist Farhad Manju was losing the prediction game when, after imploring readers to stay calm in the face of the coronavirus last week, it became obvious this week that the reality of the looming pandemic was nothing to sneeze at. Manju wrote how last weekend, quote, "I was looking for N95 masks online, and my wife and I began reining in family vacation plans for the summer. It's all a swift reversal from the insistent don't worry tone of my last column."
The change in the facts on the ground got me thinking about how we in the pundit class think about threats and think about the world these days. I think a lot of us have noticed it since 2016, maybe, or maybe since 2008, or maybe since 2000. The world seems to be getting more and more complicated, and the stories that come at us are more surprising.
You wrote, in the last couple of decades, the world has become unmoored, crazier, somehow messier. The black swans are circling. Chaos monkeys have been unleashed. You know, events that upend historical expectations. And so the prediction game is increasingly perilous.
Yeah, I mean, we saw this very clearly in 2016, where every pundit, everyone who had been looking at the polls first thought Trump wouldn't win the nomination. Then there were sort of all of this machinations regarding the general election itself. And you know, by the election, almost everyone who followed elections was surprised by the outcome. And we saw that with Brexit. We see it now in the Democratic primary. 6 months ago, I don't think many people thought that Bernie Sanders would be at the top at this point. I mean, he had a heart attack. We're in this moment where prediction has become more difficult. And I argue it's because in various ways that I think we notice, we have a lot of unknowns. The way that communication is changing, the way that business is changing because of globalization, because of instant travel, climate change. There's all of these big forces changing how human society works. I think it should invite among pundits this embrace of uncertainty.
Maybe the stability we thought we were living in was false. And if you go back to the period in between the great wars and the 60s and so on, there was always a sense of impending apocalypse. What do you think makes this period of uncertainty potentially different from earlier ones?
That there may be some reality, some version of the world that I am not seeing that contains the truth that I will miss, either because I am focusing on certain news sites or talking to certain people through social networks, and I'm kind of missing the bigger picture that somebody else's reality might be the correct one and you, because of your bubble, are in the wrong one. I mean, people felt that in 2016, I think. They should have noticed that they were not noticing substantial facts on the ground that could have given them an insight into maybe Trump was doing better than they thought they were. And maybe that's happening in lots of ways. We're just kind of missing facts because we have differing views of reality.
And yet, as you wrote, certainty is often a crucial part of commentary. A couple of years ago, we spoke with Phil Tetlock, a professor of psychology and management at the University of Pennsylvania, and he picked up on Isaiah Berlin's famous essay, Dividing Thinkers into Hedgehogs and Foxes. Tetlock divides TV pundits the same way, and he found that hedgehogs far outnumber the foxes.
And there's a pretty obvious reason for that. The hedgehogs give the media the sound bites that they want. Hedgehogs have one big idea. They try to assimilate everything into that big idea, and that makes for a compelling narrative package. Foxes are more likely to interrupt their flow of thought with things like but, however, although. So that led me to propose one very simple rule of thumb for distinguishing more fox-like from more hedgehog-like pundits. Foxes are more likely to say however, and hedgehogs are more likely to say moreover. So you have the however over moreover ratio.
So have you ever felt the pressure to be a hedgehog?
I mean, I think we all do, yeah. And I think I would add something, which is that the kind of media formats that we deal in now, chyrons on cable news or tweets, if you write a headline that is certain and that promises something, it's going to get a lot more clicks than if you're a little bit unsure about things.
So given what you've observed and what you expressed, what percentage of your columns have been focused on prediction, and do you plan on maybe ratcheting that down?
Yes, I do plan on ratcheting it down. One thing I have tried to do more often in my columns recently is less prediction and more, this sounds bad, but like moralizing. A lot of times people shy away from saying what's definitively right and wrong in the world. And, you know, I think I try to do that more often. I mean, I wrote a column last year saying that we should abolish billionaires. That wasn't a prediction. It was just like, I think that it's the right thing to do.
That's a more level playing field than making cases for things that are really impossible to foresee. What's your advice for news consumers?
The fact that the future is complicated makes us cling to people who offer certainty, and that kind of certainty is not in the offing. I mean, a few months ago, people were convinced that the economy is going to be strong for the next several years, that we were in a kind of a new place in the economy, and now the virus seems to be undoing a lot of that, and those kinds of out-of-the-blue things can just happen at any time, and we should just be open to the possibility that everyone you see on TV or on Twitter just has no idea what they're talking about because they don't know the unexpected thing that's going to come about tomorrow.
Farhad, thank you very much.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Farhad Manjoo is an opinion columnist at the New York Times. Coming up, when you dismiss a swing voter as a non-voter, you may very well lose your presidential race. This is On the Media.